Welcome back to the Veeam Communities Podcast. This is episode 123. And here with me today, I've got Paul Stringfellow of Gardner Systems, and he's a technical director over there. So Paul is a good friend of mine, and he's been a lot of the stuff that Paul does in the industry is around bringing content around the business and around compliancy to be able to portray that in, and then use technology. Or what we want to talk about is kind of a security and compliance 1-2-3, if you like. So kind of most topical, especially in the UK, is around the whole GDPR, very topical around ransomware. So I kind of wanted to get a bit of a 101 from Paul on those areas. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm all good, thank you. Yourself?
I am very well, very well indeed.
Cool, yeah. So what we wanted to just kick off with is around GDPR. So a lot of people, especially over this side of the water, so being in the UK, would have heard around the whole Brexit thing, but also around data regulations changing. And I guess from a backup perspective or a data protection point of view, is GDPR is a very topical thing that people are talking about, probably not really doing so much with or understanding so much about, but it's definitely something that we probably should be, and I guess that's what that could lead into to yourself to kind of give us that bit of an overview of that.
Yeah, well, thanks, and I think you're absolutely right. It's certainly something that I've spent an awful lot of time talking to our customers about, particularly this year. I think since the turn of 2017, I think we've seen a real ramping up of interest in GDPR and what that means for organisations. But maybe just to backtrack a little bit, I mean, my role here, and you kind of introduced really well what I do, is that we are a data management company, really. You know, so we've been around over 30 years. We're a traditional infrastructure company when we started, but really over the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen the market really shift towards data and the importance of data and the criticality of data to organisations. I think, you know, I know both of us have heard the phrases such as data is a new oil, data is a new gold, data is a new precious substance of your choosing. But I think it's right. You know, I think the idea that we can take real value from our data and turn that into something that gives us business advantage, allows us to meet our customer requirements better, allows us to get things out to market more quickly, allows us to be more profitable and more reactive to a changing business market. I think all those things are absolutely true. But there's a couple of areas then, a couple of challenges that data being this kind of crucial business asset brings. I think one of them is how do we keep all that data? How do we present all that data? How do we store all that data? I think there's a big problem around how we then protect that data from both ensuring that we've got good availability of it, that we can make sure we can protect it, have it stored in multiple locations, you know, exactly what you guys are all about. And then I think there's the issues around risk to that data. So there's the issues around data security, be that security threats from everything from kind of rogue insider employees who want to steal data, through to the threats that come from hacking, malware, and all those kind of threats that we see day to day. But the other thing that's a real big challenge to our data and kind of leads into exactly what you're talking about is regulation. And I think, you know, you mentioned GDPR, and GDPR is probably going to be the biggest data regulation shakeup that the industry's seen for maybe 20 years. It's going to vastly increase the amount of regulation that's required for the kind of data that we store, and it's going to involve a much higher level of punishment, I suppose, for people who are not looking after that data properly. Is it worthwhile maybe sharing with you what GDPR covers and maybe what it doesn't cover as well?
Yeah, I guess the first thing from my perspective is this, in the simplest form, is this an iteration of the Data Protection Act? Is that a fair assumption for someone that hasn't looked into this, or is that like the next iteration to that? But also, yeah, if we touch on the whys and what fors, but also so that it's the regardless of that wherever that data is, whether it resides in the production piece, whether it's a replica over in a DR site, or whether that's a backup file that's stored short-term on disk next to our data set or inside our data, our main primary data center, or potentially offloaded to tape. It's about understanding where and what. Where does GDPR cover all of those areas, or is it just that production?
Yeah, so it absolutely covers all of the data that we have. So so GDPR is replacing the Data Protection Directive. So it replaces the European Union's Data Protection Directive. So we've got in the UK, obviously, we also have the Data Protection Act, which is kind of a subset of that EU legislation. However, that's all going to change with GDPR. So maybe the first thing that GDPR is that GDPR is focused on personal data and personal identifiable data. It's not based on all of the data that we hold. So it's purely based on regulation around EU, what the EU term data subject for, basically EU citizens. So if you hold data on an EU citizen, then you will fall within the scope of GDPR and will have to be compliant to that. And it doesn't matter where you hold that. And I think you make a really interesting point as well about things like backup data sets. And maybe we'll come back to that as we talk about where IT plays its part in ensuring compliance. So GDPR's focus is private data. It's around this kind of idea of personal identifiable data. And that's not necessarily just the things that you might think, which is things like, obviously, name, addresses, email addresses. It's not just those things. It can also include things like IP addresses. It can include things like if we've got location tracking on a mobile device, it can potentially include that. It can include things like your face being on CCTV. All of those things that might be a way of identifying an EU citizen and invading their privacy almost, GDPR potentially will cover that within its scope. And what GDPR is in terms of, you mentioned before about whether it was an evolution of the Data Protection Act, it's a lot more wide-ranging than that. So its breadth of scope is much more wide-ranging than any regulation we've seen before that, as are the size of fines for anybody who fails to comply. So I'm sure we've all heard those headline figures of potentially a 20 million euro or 4% of global turnover in the most severe breaches of GDPR. But they are real. You know, this legislation has got real teeth behind it. And for companies who flagrantly kind of abuse the regulation and completely fail in their compliance requirements around data protection and data privacy, potentially will get a fine of that size. And certainly, even if you're an organisation where that kind of size of fine might not make sense, one of the pieces of one of the parts of the legislation is that any fine that you get will be punitive. So it will be something that you will feel if you get it. You know, it's no good looking at a small organisation perhaps who turns over a couple of million pounds and saying we're going to fine you 20 million euros because that's just unrealistic. However, they will look at that organisation and look at the kind of site, you know, look at the type of breach they've made, look at its severity, and will then punish that organisation accordingly. So it's absolutely real. It is regulation, so it's something that is going to be legislative. It will pass into law. It's already as regulation. It's already part of. It already exists as legislation, and from May 25th next year, it will be something that we will all need to be compliant with.
I get that. So there wouldn't have been that much focus around the IT within the business. Is that fair to say? Are we talking 1980s?
Well, as old as you think I am, I'm probably not that old. You actually raise a really good point there, though, and I think one thing that's something that people should understand about GDPR, that GDPR is a legal and compliance issue. So I think, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about technology, but I think it's important that organisations understand that this is not a technology problem. GDPR actually will cover, and I was looking at, yeah, I knew we were going to be chatting about this today, and I was looking at some of the EU's own stuff that they've got on their website around GDPR, and it talks on there that it also includes manual records. So the focus is data privacy, however you might hold that data. But I think it's important to realise this is not an IT issue. You know, if you work in an organisation where the organisation is saying, you're the IT guy who looks after our data, so can you make sure you do something about this GDPR stuff? Then that organisation, for me, is looking at that in the wrong way. And I've certainly not worked with any organisations who are looking at that exactly like that, but certainly organisations where potentially the boards in those businesses don't really realise that this is a business problem. You know, I think they look at this as maybe an extension of data security and data storage, but actually this is around legal and compliance issues, you know, and it's a very complex bit of legislation. You know, we talked before about its scope. Its scope is huge. There's lots of things that fall within GDPR. The threats to organizations in terms of fines, you know, for breaches, they are real business issues. You're going to get a 20 million euro fine. That's going to be something that a board level that business is going to feel. So I think it's important to realise that this is not an IT problem. And I think if you're in an organisation where you're getting this pushed onto you as an IT problem to solve out, that's probably because people don't necessarily understand what the impact of GDPR to an entire organisation is going to be. So I think it's, you know, this is absolutely a legal problem. You know, we're here talking as kind of IT professionals about where this might sit and how this might affect organisations, might affect the type of data that we keep. And I think we can keep our focus on what technology can maybe help in terms of compliance. But I think if there's nothing else that anybody takes from our chat today, should be that understand this is an overall business problem. IT is just a partner in helping you to maintain compliance and helping you to address the issues you've got. But it's no more of a partner than legal, as HR, potentially as marketing is, as the board members are. You know, IT is just a kind of a cog in the machine that ensures a business has compliance.
Yeah, and I guess that was where I was going with that, is that back when other regulations were formed, the IT environment within an enterprise or within a business wouldn't have been as large or as required as they are today. So although it's not an IT issue, it's probably going to come down to a lot of IT admins to be or architects to be able to have the knowledge of this compliancy, because it's the architects, the engineers, the administrators are the only ones that understand where and what data is being kept, and that's ultimately where, like, the likes of our software can come in from a Veeam perspective. But ultimately, the whole ecosystem is there to help us achieve more and bring more of that to make our lives easier as admins, as architects, etc.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it doesn't make good podcasting, but I'm sat here nodding vigorously as you're talking. But I think you're absolutely right that IT is going to be an essential partner in the way that an organisation meets its compliance requirements around GDPR, because the amount, as you just said, the amount of data that we have, the amount of locations of that data stored in, the amount of copies of that data that we hold, this is not going to be something that you're going to be able to do in an organization of any kind of size, at least. This is not going to be something you're going to be able to do by having somebody who spends his time filtering through your Windows file shares, looking for copies of files that might look like they belong to an EU data subject. You know, that's just going to be unrealistic for compliance. And actually, if you have a data breach and your approach has been that, there's every likelihood that your fine will probably be relatively large, because you failed really to put in place the policies and procedures that are going to effectively allow you to be compliant.
Just to wrap the GDPR, unless you've got anything else to say, Paul, is one, when was that date that this comes into play? Because I know that a lot of businesses are looking at this today and they're starting to get their head around this new legislation and starting to put these practices in place to be able to bring that so that they hit the deadline come next year. But if we just reiterate that date again.
Yeah, so it becomes, and I'm actually taking it straight off the EU's website because the wording is fantastic. Enforcement date is the 25th of May 2018, and its next line says, at which time those organisations in non-compliance will face heavy fines. So yeah, I think they're making it pretty clear that this is something that's going to be taken seriously. So it's enforceable from the 25th of May 2018. The legislation is live now. However, it became live last year. So, you know, if organisations are looking at what's my transition period from not being compliant to be compliant, if they're listening to this podcast before the 25th of May 2018, you're in that transition period now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, so from a Veeam perspective, I'm sure we're going to have some specific content out there so that we can help you to understand a bit more around this and how Veeam can potentially help as well from that perspective. So just to pivot there onto something else. So you mentioned data breach before. One of the most topical points that I'm hearing as well in the industry is around ransomware. Now, from a Veeam perspective, we have a story here. We've put out so much content around how Veeam does not prevent, helps from a recovery point of view if you are attacked from a ransomware point of view. So there is a WebEx out there or a recorded webinar that I did a few months back that kind of dives down into a very Veeam perspective of ransomware, and it's kind of a 101 of. But if I could just get your take, Paul, I think on ransomware, it's not obviously it's kind of it's an iteration of the whole spyware thing that we saw many years ago, and it's just the developers got clever and started actually putting these bots within your systems and then encrypting your data. Is there anything else that you can add around there?
Well, I think you're right. You know, the issues that you see with ransomware, and it's like any kind of we talked before about the kind of these twin threats to our data. You know, it's the thing around compliance, and then there's a thing around security. And actually, just to touch back on one thing around GDPR. One thing that's useful to remember is that GDPR is very much around data privacy, and there is a difference between what is privacy and what is security. So when we talk about things like ransomware, malware attacks, and data leak, you know, they sit much more around data security. Data privacy is much more about the data, understanding that the data. So a friend of mine who I talk to quite a lot on this around GDPR and data privacy has this kind of concept of a security wheel. If data privacy is built to a security wheel, data security is just one part of that. So on top of that, you've got things like compliance and procedures and education and how you handle the data that you keep and how you make sure that you only keep what you need and all those kind of things. But when it comes to, so security is just a part of that and kind of ransomware sits within that, doesn't it, really? It's the idea that, you know, somebody will, for whatever reason, allow some kind of malicious code into their network, and then that malicious code goes around encrypting files as it goes. And it's become an increasingly common issue. And I think technically everything said is absolutely right about it. You know, it's actually not that different from any other form of malware that you might introduce into your organization. It's got some kind of payload, and in the terms of ransomware, that payload is I'm going to go and encrypt a load of files, and then I'm going to demand probably bitcoins from you to release that. And there's been loads of high profile cases where organizations have been hit by this kind of thing. You've seen a few cases in the US of health organizations, you know, hospitals, where they've just looked at a problem and gone, we'll just pay the ransom. You know, we can't afford not to. And I dug out some research that I'd seen from, I think it was CIODrive.com, and they'd done a bit of research. I think it's probably a couple of years old now, this. And their research was that 84% of the businesses they'd spoken to wouldn't pay a ransom. However, only 67% of the businesses they talked to didn't believe they would survive a data loss. But I thought probably the most frightening one, although 84% of them wouldn't pay a ransom, one in five of the organizations who they spoke to didn't actually know whether they'd ever be able to recover their data. So it just seemed an odd, almost sticking my hand up and saying, yes, I'm prepared to lose data. I'm just going to vote for data loss right here. So I think, it's no different a problem to any other kind of malware that you might introduce. the impact of it, however, can be quite large. But I mean, there are steps that you can do to kind of mitigate that risk a little bit, and you know, and obviously the kind of data availability stuff that Veeam do is a part of that. But I mean, there are other things that you can do as well.
Yeah, no, great summary of that as well, Paul. In Veeam 1, just to touch on some of the elements where, again, Veeam aren't the prevention here. We're more of about the recovery and how we can help those affected users, those affected companies bring back their data if they were to be hit. There's like Paul said, there's many other front of the house security protection software vendors within our ecosystem that allows for much more preventative actions against that. But so from a Veeam point of view, so we have within Veeam 1 in version 9.5 that was released earlier this year was actually within the monitor, there is actually a ransomware kind of a trigger that allows to just watch for those specific signs that you may see within a ransomware attack, where high IO, high CPU, etc., and being able to report on that. It could actually be a rogue workload. It could actually be a known workload within your environment, but it's a case of you'd rather be aware of that and have visibility into your environment if there was an attack. Obviously, over time, you're going to learn which of your servers, which of your compute nodes are actually, they should be running like that, and you can exclude them from that monitor alert. Also, from an endpoint protection point of view, so one of the things that I've been reading on this, specifically on the ransomware piece, is I think the figure was 7 out of 10 at least 7 out of 10 or 70% of incidents where ransomware was detected, it was around the intrusion path came through an endpoint, so came through a sales rep laptop or along them lines, and then actually got in and infected the rest of the infrastructure that way. So from that point of view, the key is obviously the backing up right the way down to those endpoints, those sales reps laptops, and being able to protect those in this case. So the first port of call, again, not the prevention, but to allow for a protection piece over those endpoints would be our endpoint protection or our Veeam agent for Windows, which should be arriving very soon from a GA point of view. And that has the ability to, when you finish the backup, it actually has the ability to eject that media type out so that there's a complete air gap between the live system and the backup data. So if that endpoint was to then get infected, you then at least have that air gap copy that you could recover from. And I guess that comes back right round to, if that gets into the infrastructure, then we've got our Veeam Availability Suite or the Veeam Backup and Replication that allows for us to send backups off to a cloud provider, which could depend on the security provisions. It could be using our Cloud Connect and allowing a similar air gap solution, or the ultimate air gap solution is still to send something off to tape. Is there anything you'd like to add there around? So all of them as well are fully encrypted. They can be encrypted from that point of view. So being able to encrypt at source, in flight, and at rest, depending on where you're sending that data or why you're encrypting that. Paul,
I think there's a couple of things there that silly things that we recommend when we're speaking to customers around how they deal with this kind of problem. And I think you touched on loads of great stuff there that Veeam 1 can add for value here. That I think the only way that you stop these kind of attacks, you know, there's no good now having your only data security capability in your business being things that work on signatures, things that are based on stuff that you already know, because a lot of these kind of attacks that we see are zero-day threats. You know, they're things that people haven't seen before. And so it's no good just having your kind of antivirus, you know, your traditional antivirus approach being it's just something based on a signature. It's looking for stuff that it already knows. You know, we're not saying you shouldn't have that. Absolutely, you should have that. You know, it's important that we have that kind of protection in place. But actually, what you're talking about with what Beam 1 allows you to do, you know, for what we tend to see now, it's the only effective way that you're going to be able to deal with the kind of modern security threat. You know, you need to have a baseline understanding of what is normal behavior. You know, we talk to people a lot about this kind of user behavior analytics type stuff. You know, and it's important that you have an understanding of the baseline of what's normal across your network, what's normal across your organization, what's normal across the way that you the way that your users work with your data. And then you need something in place that can spot when not normal is happening, you know, when something different is happening in that data set. Not only be able to spot it, but at least be able to alert and maybe ideally be able to do something about it. So if we suddenly see, you know, Johnny has turned up and Johnny normally opens 50 files a day, but has now opened 5,000 files in the last 30 seconds, I think it's fair to say that Johnny probably isn't doing what he's normally doing. And the reality is that that probably isn't him, and that's some rogue piece of software doing things it shouldn't. And so having something in place that can spot that, can stop that spreading, and then can come back and inform you and say, right, so I've seen that. These are all the files that Johnny's touched in the last 30 seconds. I've stopped him accessing any more. You need to go and have a look at those files. And if we then find that those 1,000 files or whatever it is that account has suddenly accessed are now all encrypted, and there's you know, a little friendly message saying deposit billions of bitcoins or new shaped £1 coins, which admittedly doesn't translate very well to the non-UK audience. But you know, if you're seeing that kind of thing, what you want to be able to do is come back to your IT administration and say, these are the files that we've hit. Get into my Veeam, you know, Veeam availability suite. Get into my backups. Pull those files back really quickly for me. So we haven't stopped it. We haven't stopped the attack. But what we have done is very much minimize its impact. And ultimately, that's all you can do with a lot of this kind of stuff. You know, when you're looking at availability, it's understanding what risk is. It's trying to mitigate the risk as best we can. And then it's being able to minimize the impact of that risk. Now, I think the other thing I was going to throw in was that, as you were describing kind of the stuff that Veeam can do in that space, I think one of the things that interests me about GDPR, you know, just trying to swing back to that again, it's not because I'm obsessed on it. but, you know, if we look at what GDPR is, one of the things that I certainly talk to our customers about with it is that even if GDPR wasn't regulation with which you've got to be compliant, there's a whole bunch of really good practice that GDPR encourages. And everything that you've just talked about with how we spot ransomware all sits within that. Understanding where all our data is, whether that's sat inside the security of our network or sat outside on our endpoint devices that, you know, could be Windows, maybe could be something else. You know, if it's sat on that device, we need to know that data exists. We need to know what that data has within it. You know, so we need to, you know, these are the kind of things that technology can assist with when it comes to compliance and kind of security from things like malware. You know, we've got to understand what that data has, what's sensitive, what isn't. We've got to understand, does anybody, you know, do people look at even access that data? And then it always is important questions if they don't access that data, because we're talking here about both compliance and security. If we're holding data that nobody ever looks at, you've got to ask yourself the question, why are you holding it? You know, one of the I saw a presentation a few weeks back where they were talking about compliance, and one of the things that stuck with me from that presentation was, if you don't have it, you can't lose it. And it's the same with this. If you don't have it, it can't be infected by ransomware or any other kind of threat. So I think it's a serious piece here to look at the amount of data that you hold and start to ask yourself the question, why am I keeping all of this? You know, you guys will see that, won't you? The amount of data that people hold and the amount of data they want to protect, the amount of data they want to make available and highly available to their users just continues to grow. But that's because we're all a bit like magpies, see data as shiny things and think that we need to collect it all. So, but yeah, I think the things you can do there, make sure you've got a tool in place that can spot that abnormal activity, can register what that abnormal activity is, and then make sure you've got a nice, robust solution in place for data protection that says, I've seen 1,000 files, they've all been encrypted, I'm not going to pay my Bitcoin ransom. What I'm actually going to do is go to my data protection administrator and say, do you mind if I have these 1,000 files back? They're then going to go to Veeam and say, yeah, of course I can do that, and you can have them back in 30 seconds. Here they are presented back to you. You know, and that's how you mitigate the risk, really, that comes from these kind of attacks.
Let's say we've got a Windows file server, many people have, or a Windows file server where all of you've got the finance department have got theirs, the HR department, et cetera, and it might be that GDPR dictates that we can't keep HR, or we can't keep finance, or we can't keep marketing documents for longer than, or we can never keep that in a backup, or only a one-time backup, or some sort of regulation there. We actually, within Beam Backup and Replication, we have a feature called BitLooker, which has two plays, really. So one is when you delete a file out of Windows, it doesn't actually mean that it's deleted. It just sits in a table, and the next backup would traditionally still pick that up, and you'd still have a copy of that within the system. But the second bit is actually being able to go through your on a per VM basis and pick out files and folders, even from a wildcard point of view. So the way I'd kind of introduced this as an SE pre GDPR talks was very much if you've got a Windows server and you have and someone has accidentally, and I'm using air quotes there, they've accidentally uploaded their iTunes account to your share. It wouldn't be the first time, or potentially their holiday pictures. Then we've got the ability to wildcard those out as well. So star.mp3 or star.mp4, etc. We've got the ability to get quite granular in what we want to back up and what we don't want to. So one, there's two benefits to that. Is one, in this instance, is if there is a requirement for us not to keep it on the same retention schedule, but from an infrastructure point of view, we need to make sure that the majority of that virtual machine is safe and secure, and we have a retention of that from a backup perspective, and it adheres to whatever that SLA, that recovery point or time objective that we have to adhere to. But then also it allows us to exclude those or put them into their own like file level backup or volume level backup on using other Veeam tools, and it kind of just gives you that granularity. In the first instance, it's around we only want to back up what you need to back up. Very very similar to when we come to recovery, we only want to recover what you need to recover. There's no point if you only need an individual mail item from your Exchange server. There is absolutely no point in bringing back the whole VM to then just get that one virtual machine. That one mail item, when we can just use our explorers to dive into that ADB file and pull out those individual files as we need. And the same with all of our recovery techniques.
Yeah, and I think it's that visibility of data that is going to be is absolutely critical in the way that you're going to manage data regulation going forward. You know, is this kind of regulatory framework is wide-reaching in its remit, but a huge part of it is knowing what data you've got. You know, and that's not just knowing what data you've got in terms of making sure that it's all kept in a compliant way, and that you know when users are accessing it, and that you know if there's been a breach. If you know data's gone out of the organisation in a way that it hasn't, you know, a big part of that regulation is you've only got 72 hours to mention a breach to inform the Information Commissioner in the UK. You've only got the 72, and that's 72 real hours, not 72 business hours or working hours. Now that's a 3-day period to make sure that they know. So it's an important tip is make sure you don't have a data breach on a Friday afternoon because somebody's got a really busy weekend. But you can only do those things if you've got visibility and insight. But that's true for all areas of the way that you deliver data and data management. You know, you said before there about only protect the data that you need to protect, as opposed to building these kind of large data protection solutions and then protecting people's iTunes stuff. There's loads of but I think all of this kind of stuff does sit in something that I think is a useful mantra to people to remember. Ultimately, this stuff is your data and it's your responsibility, you know, and that doesn't matter whether you're doing it on-prem, whether you're hosting it in a cloud, whether you're giving it to a service provider. Ultimately, you are responsible for all this, and whether you're responsible for protecting it from things like ransomware or whether you're responsible for data breach. And another useful part of regulation that people maybe want to look into is if you are having data hosted by a provider somewhere, that's important that you've got a contract and an understanding with that provider that if they lose that data, because they would potentially be your data processor while you're the data controller for that, ultimately you as the owner of that data as a data controller are still responsible for that leak going from a cloud provider, you know, going from a hosting provider, going from some third party who stores your data. So knowing where that data is and having the kind of insights that you're talking about that you can do with VeeamONE and with the availability suite, you know, having those kind of insights is essential really if you're going to meet these kind of compliance regulations, and also having that insight that says these files have changed, I can see this kind of odd behavior on these files, let's stop it, let's recover what's been changed, you know, is again a crucial part of protecting yourself against kind of the modern, you know, the modern data security threat as well.
Yeah, cool. And I guess to wrap things up here then, Paul, is there anything? So, where can people find out more about these topics?
I think in terms of ransomware, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, I think the things that we've covered there are just those key things to remember. You know, make sure you've got visibility. Make sure you know what's, you know, and if you do have a, you know, mitigate the risk the best you can. But if you do have an attack, know what's being changed and have the right kind of solution that allows you to recover that quickly. So I think that's just good practice, good housekeeping stuff. But if you want to know more about GDPR and what its impacts are, you know, and I'll go back to something I said right at the start, bear in mind this is a legal and compliance issue, not an IT issue. However, there are some things that IT will be essential in allowing organisations to do. But you can go to EUGDPR.org. That's the EU's own site around GDPR, and gives you details on the legislation, gives you a frequently asked questions section, tells you about the key aspects of the regulation you need to think about, and then also the Information Commissioner Officer in the UK. So have a look for the ICO's website, stick on a search engine of your choice, and go and have a look at their coverage of what's on there around GDPR, how you're compliant. There's some really interesting stuff which has gone on there actually about what it means about consent, so the consent for gathering data from EU data subjects. So, you know, it's a fascinating, I know it probably doesn't sound the most interesting topic on paper, but actually it is a really fascinating topic. It is complex, but I think ultimately it will allow us all, where we're involved in managing data, where we're involved in building data strategies, you know, I think it will encourage us all to make sure that we take good practice and that we build security and privacy into the very design of the kind of things that we do. You know, and ultimately that's for, you know, for us as people who work in that industry, but also us as human beings who have people holding our data, you know, all of that thing is going to be positive.
And then one final thing then, Paul, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to plug yourself, your Twitters, your...
Just 30 seconds, there's the challenge. So yeah, I'm at TechStringy on the Twitters, and you can also find me on techstringy.com, which is the blog site, and there is a podcast as well. As Michael said, he's been a guest on more than once, and you can find that at podcast.techstringy.com. And I've got a little series of 3 or 4 episodes that we've just done, which looks at data privacy and data security, so looks at that in the context of the regulation, as well as looking at some of the practical things that you can do. And if people want to, you know, if people have got questions and want to ping those to me in any of those places, or they can always contact me through my work email address as well, which is paul.s@gardnersystems.co.uk.
So thank you very much, Paul. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more around the whole regulation piece, as much as we don't want to hear around the ransomware attacks and those large companies or any size companies are having to deal with. But ultimately, that's now the way of life from this industry point of view. So let's close that out. So that was episode 123, a security and compliance 123. Thank you very much.
Thank you.